Hey, listeners, are you getting inspired to dive deeper into your learning of EFFT? If so, head on over to Catherine's website to check out her list of upcoming trainings. Some trainings are focused on combining EFFT with young kids and EFFT play therapy. So head on over to her website and we hope to see you in the future. Check it out at katherinedebruin.com, katherinedebruin.com, and we hope to see you in the future.
Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back, listeners, to the podcast, The Family Express, with Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans. We have a very special guest today. I know I say it every time. Coming to you from Toronto, we have Stephanie Chimienti here to talk with us. Hi, Stephanie. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Rhonda. Hi, Katherine. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, we're so glad to have you here talking about a very specific topic, which you are very passionate about. You light up as you already talk about it just this little bit. We're going to talk about EFFT play therapy focused on aggression and anger. I'm so excited to learn from you and to hear some stories and gain some practical tips from you and to just hear your experience about it, because I know you're so passionate about it. Thank you so much for being here. I'm stoked.
Yay! Thank you so much, Rhonda. Okay, so starting with how I got here, right?
Yeah. How did you get so passionate about this?
Yeah. So my whole life, I knew I was destined to work with children and youth. It was like, you know, when you do that career class and they say, oh my gosh, you know, like you would work best with children and youth. And I was like, yeah, that's right. So my journey started as when I was a teenager. I was an overnight counselor and I got to work with a lot of children and youth there. And then that sprung me into like the beginning part of my career, where I was a child and youth worker, and aggression and anger was very, very much present. And I was taught to be terrified of it. Sometimes I still am, depending on like how they come at me. Like I came from experiences where some children and youth would throw hands or throw feet at me or throw things at me. And so I was trained in UMEB. And so that's like a way to like help contain that aggressive behavior. And when I got into, because I also knew that wasn't going to be the rest of my life, I knew I was meant for more. And so when I found therapy, it became an individual family and couple therapist, an EFFT, emotionally focused therapy, but EFFT, EFCT, and EFIT, I really wanted to be able to make a new relationship with anger and aggression. Because what I learned is I needed to lean into it. So in the early part stage of like my therapist career, I had some kids like throw some markers at me, and it took me back to like that place of like being absolutely terrified that kiddos were just going to, they hated me, or oh, I don't know, but like,
I mean, were you afraid of getting hurt? Like,
totally.
That's the first thing I think of, Stephanie. It's like, I'm afraid I'm going to get hurt.
Yeah, totally. I remember I had like a few concussions as a child and youth worker. So it definitely took me back of like that place of being terrified, you know?
Yeah. I mean, leaning into anger is a hard thing, right? Because anger involves aggression as well. And definitely for me, working with anger in play therapy and trying to encourage children to actually express it so I can get to understanding what's underneath it, I've gotten a lot of flack about that.
Yeah.
Anything from, why do you even have toys in the playroom that would invite aggression? How can you possibly have something that looks like a dagger? Mm-hmm. Or showing videos of child sessions and even clinicians being shocked and horrified at the anger getting expressed in the room, to the point that I felt bad, like, am I doing the wrong thing? Should I not be allowing this anger out in the open? Mm-hmm. And then even in the theoretical space, like, is this just catharsis? Like, think of in our field a couple decades ago where people were encouraged to go out and do self-defense classes to tap into their rage or go and, you know, beat something up in a healthy way. And is that healthy, right? Is it actually okay to go into this anger? Like, I think our field and generally populations are like, stay away from that anger. It's aggressive. It's bad. It hurts you. Like, don't go there. Just contain it, like you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even here in Toronto, Canada, I mean, I am in Oakville, Ontario, Canada. Even in like this scenery, like we have like WMSAB and we're just trying to like make sure like if you get hit, it's your fault. So like there's so much also shame onto like the therapist of like, you caused this. This is your fault. Yeah, which is interesting. Vice versa too, right? Like there's also so much shame that I see in kiddos too when they actually finally get to express like that anger. And even if it comes out in aggression, it can just, it seems so shameful. Mm. And we're trying to teach them how to express. And even when they finally do express and they're only doing it in the way they know how, it's so looked down upon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I imagine with corporations or clinics or countries, there's just so much fear around liability and whose fault is it if there's anger and someone gets hurt.
Yeah.
But how do you help kids get this rage out and learn how to manage it?
Yeah.
I guess that's the question.
Yeah.
Like, we can't pretend it's not in there.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we also don't want them feeling completely out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, then they feel terrible and they don't often want to be out of control like that. So what do we do with that anger?
I feel like, and a lot of in my own practice right now, is I really want to see it, right? So sometimes when I do parent sessions and I'm introducing them to like the way that I work, I say, I actually really want to see your kid get angry. I want to see them throw that tantrum, air quotes. I want to see like how they make that mess, how they throw things, because for me, I see that there's so much underneath it. And some parents are like, oh, whoa,
sure.
Are you sure you're okay? And, you know, I've just learned to like, kind of like embrace it, because I'm like, that's actually like where we see the most of it. Like if we think about, you know, like when we get sessions and there's not like a lot of talk because it feels like we have to pull a lot of like that emotion into the room.
Mm-hmm.
So when anger is there, we actually can pull it into the room. We can play with it live. We can see everything that's going on and then we can slow it down. I also just did the eFit Essentials training with Leanne and Robin a couple of weeks ago. And I think the most in like when we're speaking about like anger and aggression, like our job is to whisper to the amygdala. We're trying to really soften it. We're trying to be able to understand where it even came from in the first place. That's mostly like what I think about with anger. But then when I think about also emotionally focused therapy and we think about like dividing the emotions into like secondary and primary, a lot of the times, like we think about anger being the secondary when it can also be primary. So I definitely want to pick your brains on that one. So I think it could be both, but I know everybody has their own perspective. So
Stephanie, just for our listeners, let's define primary and secondary anger or emotion. And also I heard recently that sometimes when anger is expressed like that, clinicians will try to figure out, is it a meltdown versus a tantrum? Have you ever heard it defined differently?
No, but I would love to hear this. If you know more, we should definitely explore this more.
Chat about that, yeah. Well, let's start with the primary and secondary emotion concept, maybe. How do you understand that?
Yeah, okay. So for me, when I think about it in two ways. So if we're thinking about anger as a secondary emotion, I think about it in a sense of like a mask, right? Sometimes it can be like the last thing that we show or the last thing that we express, because it is trying to protect what we're really feeling, right? Anytime like I explain this to clients, it's like, it's so much easier to show that you're angry versus sad and lonely. And I think about it as like protection. And the other part about like secondary is like, I think about it as like a buildup, right? Like there's a buildup of like a bunch of feelings. Like we could be feeling sad and lonely, and those are more like down regulating emotions. And then it starts to build up. Like we start to feel like that ickiness, like maybe embarrassment, maybe we were put on the spot. Maybe we were feeling ashamed. And then I think about like that next level of like, maybe like our body needed something, like maybe like it was overstimulating. Maybe we were just tired. Maybe we're also hungry. And it like all builds up until like that one last thing that happens. And then poof, we're exploding. And that's what people see. So that's how I see it as like secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And then for primary, I think about it as like, sometimes like when there's a lot of injustice. Anger can also be like that call to change. So it's the emotion that we're expressing, but it's the spark that ignites change after we've been, we've been humiliated, or it's just been like a whole bunch of things in a series. And that anger is like that one thing that can trigger change. I don't know if I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's anger as a protection. And then there, and I don't know if you're saying there's two different things, but one way to understand anger is it's a protection. And it also sounds like sometimes anger has a function of signaling change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I see it.
Yeah.
I think they're two different things that also work together. And the reason why I think it's important in family and child and youth work is we really need to like distill it, because it can get, it can also like blends together, kind of like what Catherine was asking earlier about the difference between like a tantrum versus a meltdown. Right, a lot of people combine those things together as a way to express what they're seeing versus what's actually happening in their bodies, what they're feeling. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So for our listeners, a tantrum can be kind of viewed through the lens of a voluntary, goal-oriented outburst. And the kid, in this case, we're talking about kids, the kid is trying to get what they want through this really kind of intentional, voluntary outburst that has a goal. Whereas a meltdown is more of the involuntary reaction to sensory overload, maybe emotional overload. And I do think that we do see lots of clinicians, and I think definitely parents and families, use the word tantrum and meltdown synonymously when they're not. Mm-hmm. And that psychoeducation alone might be really helpful in framing when do you see your kid having a tantrum versus when do you see them having a meltdown? And that could be a good place to start with some families.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that definition and separation of those two make a lot of sense. And it is helpful for families to know that, because sometimes, like, obviously, like, if we don't give our child that candy in the store, they're going to have, like, this giant tantrum because, I mean, obviously, we want the chocolate as the child. And then, obviously, as the parent, we're like, oh, do we want another cavity or a dentist visit? Or we're thinking into the future type of thing. And that's when the worlds kind of, they clash together, I feel. Yeah.
That sounds so important, Stephanie. Like you're saying that if you've got a kiddo who's behaving in this way, and then you've got a parent or caregiver who's overwhelmed by it, by the time you lay eyes on them, this has become quite an issue. And we want to try to just understand what's going on here. Is this an overload? Is this we can't just treat the anger a certain way. We need to sort of understand its function.
Yeah.
Like where's it coming from? What's this about? Which means we got to go towards it and explore it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we want to come alongside the family and then go into these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, like, what would that look like?
Yeah. Well, okay. So I think a part of it also comes to about like when we're understanding like where it comes from. I've been reading, do you know who Lisa Dion is? And her, So she's also a play therapist, but she's the founder of Synergetic Play Therapy. And the cool thing about her practice is she actually has a full book that I read prior for us to have this session, this podcast today, called Aggression in Play Therapy and How We Use It and How We Use Our Bodies as the Therapist. Because at the end of the day, like, I know in emotionally focused therapy, we say we are like the secure attachment figure, but we're a surrogate for it so that we can teach our clients how to become their own secure attachment figures. And in her language, she uses it as like, what is it called? She uses it as we're like the regulators, or we're also the toys in the room. Like we're the most important.
We matter
toy.
Too. We impact as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And so as I was reading her book about aggression and play therapy, it also was like, oh, wow, this is exactly how I work. But it's about inviting it in. And so what she says a lot too about, she talks about like the brain and the nervous system. And so how we perceive like threats and when we go into protection. And a lot of the times too, like, let's just say like, okay, so I'll give an example. A few like overarching clinical examples that I've had the past week. I use the anger volcano as a way to kind of distill anger and what it looks like. And what that is like kind of like what I was saying earlier, we're kind of like seeing the different levels of emotion that kind of builds up before we see the actual explosion. And I like doing it with both like child and parent there at the same time so we can slow down and identify it. Depending on like the age, sometimes like I'll turn like the ingredients into like a scavenger hunt around the room. So they have to find the ingredients and match the emotion. And then
super.
Yeah.
Great. Because that also invites movement in the office, which I think is really helpful for kiddos. It's not just sitting down on the couch, pen and paper, like I'm allowed to move around. And I just think movement itself, emotional movement or physical movement, sensory movement, mm-hmm. I just think it like wakens up our experience mm-hmm. as opposed to sitting and thinking about something.
Yeah, 100%. I feel that too. And also anger is a very energizing emotion. Like it is going to cause our tone to change. It is going to cause our body to move. It is going to like maybe narrow our focus a little bit. And so I found like when I was like introducing like different ways to be able to like invite the conversations. So we're still having some movement and we're still being able to like provide some kind of psychoeducation of what's actually happening to your body. Mm-hmm. And so the other thing too that I also find I do a lot in my work is like using my imagination. You already noticed that I have a lot of creativity. But there's like an instruction manual in my volcano kit with like some fun facts of volcanoes. And I've like had kids. I know.
This is so great. Let's learn about volcanoes while we're at it. I love it.
I know. And I've had kids. I'm like, okay, so like, let's relate this actual fun fact about this volcano to what happens when you show your anger. And one of like the first little fun fact thing is like magma is inside the volcano. So like, this is like the stuff that we're seeing about like all of our emotions. And the only difference between magma and lava is magma's inside the volcano. Lava is outside the volcano. So magma is like all the emotions that happened really quickly, either really quickly or build up over day. And the lava is the anger that we see, that we only get to see, which is unfortunate because then it's like there were so many needs that needed to be met beforehand. Maybe they weren't safe to communicate, or maybe we just felt it so fast and we just didn't connect what was happening in our bodies to our brains, and then be able to communicate that with our secure attached caregivers. So there's so much that happens. And then when the lava comes out, boom, I'm this bad kid for having this giant explosion. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Yeah. The other fun fact too is like, airplanes are not allowed to fly through active volcanoes. And that's just because all of the smoke and ash and possibly maybe fireballs like can clog the engines.
Right.
And so what happens to the airplane if like the engine doesn't work anymore? They're in a crash. And I kind of think about that as like when parents kind of scoop in and they say, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, like we didn't mean to do this. Or, oh, no, no, let's get over it. You don't feel that way. Like that's the airplane that crashes because you're not going to get a response from a child that's like, oh, yeah, okay, well, I get what my parents are saying to me right now. They're going to say, it's going to rev it up even more and they're going to make the airplane crash. Is that, I hope that made sense.
Oh, let's try that again for my brain. That's so the airplane is the parent coming in too quickly to, I might use the word rescue or to apologize, to kind of make the moment end or stop in some way.
Yeah.
You're saying the kid's not going to really be helped. That's not going to achieve the goal the parent is wanting.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
100%. I kind of sometimes like when I reframe it with parents in like their own parent session, like I don't do this in front of the child. Sometimes I'm like, okay, so let's practice something really quickly. Tell me how you feel about something. And then they'll say, oh, well, like I feel this, I feel this. And now tell me how you feel after I say this to you. You don't feel that way. And I usually like, they start to see like, I see their gears start to turn of like, oh my gosh, I do that to my kid. Yes, sometimes, but like, that's because obviously you're a parent and like, we move through things really fast. We kind of think things in the moment. But at the same time too, it's like, it's our call to slow down for just a second. That's why I reflect it. And that's why it's similar to like the airplane of like, when I tell you how, like, oh, you don't feel that way when we're invalidating. That's how like that airplane can crash, right? It's been a crash. And then also maybe in my imaginary world, that volcano like revs up even more. Like it's just more explosive.
Well, because now it has jet fuel mixed in with lava and magma.
Exactly.
That's a really bad scenario.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. So I use all of these fun facts or another fun fact. Actually, it wasn't really a fun fact. This is just like another way my brain went. It's like, okay, so there's all of these trees, all of these plants. And when the lava comes down the mountain, what happens? And a lot of kiddos say, oh my gosh, they burn. They die. And I'm like, what does that say about like what happens after? Like, and then I kind of zoom out and I'm like, well, like, let's look at the room. Like when we like throw everything around the room or we've like punched holes in the wall. When we see like how like that aggression ends up coming out. You know, like I feel like it's like our way to metaphorically describe what is happening in the room. So now we have to go clean it up.
Yeah, the impact on the environment.
Yeah.
Around the kid.
Yeah.
Impact on the environment, impact on the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the people too, I think about like the relationships, right? Like so many ruptures. And I remember I had a couple of clients say this one to me after like, oh, so what happens to the relationships? Well, you know, the lava can harden after and then the tree can regrow. And I'm like, beautiful. Obviously, in our imaginations, we're going to make sure like the lava cools a lot faster and the tree can grow a lot faster.
The understanding of time is kind of different. In the
I know. It's so different, but metaphorically, it makes sense.
Right.
I don't know. I just found like when I placed it in this way, I don't know.
Listeners, check out our book for children of any age. It's called A Jumble of Thoughts and a Tangle of Feelings. It's on Amazon.com. If you know a child out there who is having a tough time, but unable to put that distress into words, this book is your guide to helping them figure out what is going on. Whether you're an educator, a therapist, or a parent, we really think this will be a helpful guide for you.
Kind of different. Like some people use the anger iceberg as a way to also describe the two, but feel like sometimes like the iceberg, yeah, it's only like the little tip that you see, but I also feel like it's the same thing with the volcano, except there's so much more that happens after the explosion. Does that make sense?
No, I think you're totally right. And I actually used to use the iceberg back when I was working with kids more exclusively. And then I realized like the metaphor just didn't follow, like the thread just didn't follow enough because an iceberg just sits there.
Yeah.
And nothing actually comes out.
Yeah.
And then nothing's impacted by the iceberg just sitting there. So I just realized how it just, the metaphor just didn't work.
Yeah.
What I'm learning and loving about what you're saying is you use the metaphor, not just with the kids, but for the family system, for the parents as well. Mm-hmm. And then you are also engaging the parents in how their response to the eruption can be a help or a hindrance. Like they have an impact on the process of the anger being expressed, which I think is for parents to be able to see the impact that they have in the moment on the emotion. Mm-hmm. You get miles and miles out of that with families and helping families get to their goal of, we eventually want to understand the anger and the aggression. Mm-hmm. And I think all parents have a goal of the aggressive behaviors do need to subside and reduce. And I think that helping the parents see their impact on the emotional expression as well helps you achieve the goal of eventually reducing the actual aggressive behaviors, because I think all parents want that.
Yeah, I think so too. The other thing too, so I literally also just came off of the Homeward Bound training with Gail Palmer and Robin Williams Blake. And we were talking about like doing like parent sessions and whatnot and how we want them to process. Obviously, like we don't want the parent to like go into their own childhood and do all of like their processing for the first time in front of the child, because we want to make sure that they like understand and whatnot. So like earlier, like what I said with like inviting them out, with even validating what invalidation feels like. I definitely don't want to do that in front of the kiddos because it's also going to increase shame and whatnot. But I also want them to be able to see how their kid feels, what it's like to be their kid. So that's also why like I like showing like what invalidation might feel like, because that's also what revs up anger. Revs it up for sure.
I think most parents would say that their natural response to a kid's sadness, oh, that's totally okay. And then they might not see that their automatic response to their own kid's anger or aggression, and how like, no, you really don't feel that way, or it's don't be angry about that, it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. How that does impact that emotional expressive motion, a moment. And then the explicit or implicit messages kids get about anger itself. Is it okay to be angry or not?
Yeah. Is it okay to feel angry or not? And I think the answer is it is totally okay to feel angry. It's just about how we show it. And I think this kind of gets me into a bit about like how therapists can work with, I mean, who at least have some like informed training of like play therapy and how to use your body and how to be with children and youth when we're trying to express those things. And so for me, like, especially something that I've learned from like Lisa Dion, it's kind of like, we want to be able to invite the kiddo to show us still what they are feeling, but show me in a different way. Like, show me in a way that like may not, you're not actually punching me. You're maybe just like punching like, the pillow, or like we're throwing, I have like these like little like snowball puffball balls, or like we're throwing that. So obviously like we're not trashing anything, like not trashing, but like shattering things in the room. But it's like, show me another way. Like, I see you. Oh my goodness, you are so angry. Like, we have to whisper to that amygdala in our brains so that like we know we get it, and let's also still continue talking about it or showing and expressing, but maybe not in a way that like physically like hurts me. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Stephanie, those are so many interesting things that you're sharing. Can you give an example of what does it mean to use your body? Mm. And then like, what's the cotton ball idea that I'm fascinated?
Yeah. Okay. So to use my body, it's like, I kind of think about it, it's like if a little kid is sitting in front of me and they are showing me a lot of aggression, I don't think that me like sitting in a corner is going to help regulate that anger or discomfort that they're feeling. And so for me, it's like, okay, like let's use this energy. Like, what do you want to do? Like, sometimes like I invite them, like, do you want to like throw something? Like I kind of sit in that, I meet them where they're at. Maybe not on a level of like, let's punch each other, but like sometimes like if they really need to get it out or whatever play story that they have going on, sometimes like they like to like sword fight, or sometimes they like to throw things, or sometimes they like to like punch the pillow. And I invite that in because I feel like if I told them no, I'm also increasing so much more shame. And there's so much more extra stuff that we're going to have to process later. So I might as well let them express it and then sit down and process it later. And like this Convolve no thing I have, I don't have it close to me right now, but it's like this, like, it's like a giant pom-pom. That's, I think that's the way to describe it. It's about like the size of my hand, maybe. It fits in my palm pretty well and will like make targets in the room. So sometimes like I'll put up like empty water bottles and like we'll throw them at like different targets. So we're like targeting like where we want that anger to go, or where we want, or maybe who made us angry, or what situation made us angry. Because under that was probably so much hurt, right? Like, oh, like that kid at recess, like really made fun of me. So we're throwing that there. And then it's like, it gives me an opportunity to sit with, oh, like, yeah, that made you so angry. Yeah. So I kind of conjecture a little bit. I wonder if that also made you feel hurt. You help me. I feel like I use you help me a lot. I find that helps a lot with like, at least like focusing where the anger is going. And then we can distill it. Hope that.
Yeah. So you're inviting the anger to be expressed in session in a very physical way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the inner work that you're doing is you're conjecturing what other emotions were part of the magma on the inside in that moment.
Yes, the magma. Love that. It's definitely the prime tool that I use in my work. I keep like that volcano kit in my like my cupboard of all of my goodies that I use for child and youth work. But it's always like, I don't know, I feel like the parents that I get, it's like, oh, they're such this, like, they get so angry and then they explode, or like they hold it in and then they just explode and I don't know where it came from. And I'm like, let's slow down. That's why we like, we zoom in to seeing like what that magma is. So yeah,
sounds good. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Where do families get stuck with anger and aggression? Where do they get stuck? What are the things that they're gonna have a hard time accepting the reframe on? Or what are they gonna bring to you over and over when they're like, they're just not getting something? Or where does it, that's a better question. Maybe we should switch. Where would a therapist get stuck with anger and aggression?
I feel like, okay, so when a therapist gets stuck with like anger and aggression, I think about like our own ways of like how we protect ourselves. Like I think it's so important that you have to do your own individual work as a therapist to engage in anger and aggression, because naturally, okay, this is another thing that my brain does, is creative things. Naturally, like when we see like an angry bear coming at us, we're going to want to like hide. We either freeze, we either want to run away, or we want to maybe in rare cases, fight the bear. And so I think if we don't do our own work, our nervous system is going to go to that primitive place of responding to how do we protect ourselves. And then as soon as we get into that place of like protection, we're not in the room with our client. Like if we want to be very attuned to like what's going on with our client, with the kiddo, with the family, we really have to be able to focus and ground what's happening on the inside for us, or else their messages are going to be missed. We're going to miss a tune. And then ruptures happen even more, I find. So definitely grounding us, I think, is a big thing. Another place where I find therapists get stuck is too, like, again, maybe not necessarily all therapists, depending on like what research, what modalities and stuff that we are trained in. But I also think about like societal messages of like, you are like this bad kid, or you're like a delinquent. Like, I just think about like societal messages of like what anger labels you as. And sometimes we can get stuck into that. It's like, oh, like they're not listening to me. Oh, like now they're trashing my room and I have to clean it up. And I mean, realistically, as a play therapist, like we have to be willing to clean the mess. So I think a bit about like how we channel ourselves, check in with ourselves, has a lot to do with when we get stuck. And if we're not able to sit down in the session and say, oh, okay, I know where this part of me is coming from, then I definitely do suggest like taking some time outside of sessions and like slowing down and seeing like what happened to you when you saw this, what happened to you when you felt this. Definitely helps a lot when we're working specifically with anger, because a lot of the times our job is to slow down and distill the emotion. But it just takes a lot of slowing down. I feel like that's the biggest reminder. Every time we do it in EFFT training, it's always slow down for a second and see what's going on. Yeah.
And when we slow down as therapists and we look at what happened to us in that session when the anger or aggression came out and how did we respond or react, when we slow down and look at that, that might bring up our past experiences of when anger or aggression was, we were exposed to that from somebody else. And so when someone was angry or aggressive in front of me or around me, how did I feel? What happened to me at that time? Who was allowed to be angry and express anger in the family? Who wasn't allowed to express anger in the family? So it can reach back into our own attachment histories and our own relationship that we end up developing to anger and aggression. And then that might need some support around. If we're going to work with anger and aggression as it comes alive in the room.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I feel about it. I'm trying to think of like other examples when anger kind of shows up. I find like I do like, and I mean, I've had moments, obviously it's not perfect. Like, I remember there was another time with one of my clients and they wanted to squish me and my natural part came out and was like, I'm sorry. Like, our parts do come out and I think it's okay for them to come out. And it's also, I think about the relationship too. It's like being able to use what is happening in our bodies and communicating that with our clients. Because I think a lot of the time being able to narrate what's going on instead of having them assume what even my reaction was in the first place. I don't want them to have to assume. I'd rather them know, not in a sense of like, oh, this brought me back to like this traumatic memory. It's, oh, I started feeling like a little scared in my gut there for a second. Mm. And it caused me to kind of say, I'm sorry, but I realized I kind of wasn't there with you for a second. And like, I'm okay like noticing that because I find like it humanizes it more. And especially being in such a relationship model, there has to be a lot of like that synergy together. And I think it's flexible. Like there's going to be some days where, you know, I'm totally okay with them like trashing like my entire room. I say trashing, but another word would be is expressing colorfully in my room. And then there's some days where I'm like, oh, okay, I really don't want like the sand tray out and I don't really want to have to clean up that. And I think that's an okay limit to set with some kiddos. Like, you know what? Today, I'm actually not feeling okay to do sand tray. So I'm actually going to leave it outside of the room until maybe next time I'll feel better about it. But today I don't. And I feel like that says a lot for kiddos too, especially like even my reaction too. Like if I let the sand tray be in here and then there's sand everywhere, I would imagine it's going to be a hard time for me to hold that together and say, oh, now I have to clean it up. So I'm very vocal about sharing like what's going on inside of me so that they also know how to name things in themselves. I think that's an important part about naming aggression, naming the anger, right? Like, I think about that, especially in a part of like explaining like EFT, especially with new clients, like, like, how do you express anger? Yeah, that's where I kind of come from. I'm just seeing some questions come up. So trying to think about some last inspiration for your listeners. So for me, I got comfortable learning about anger because I realized some of like, I remember having like a couple of clients and seeing like their faces after, like, I was like, for example, like when I got thrown markers at me, I realized my outward expression of what happened to me made them stop and also made them question what I was doing. Like, they, like, it felt like I took them out of their experience. And so that's what's really got me into exploring anger more and more, because when I think about anger again, like, I sometimes think of it as like a mask, or sometimes I think about like a way to like ignite change. And so, for me, like, I thought if we allow all the other emotions in the room, why not allow anger? I feel like if we're saying no to anger, we're really excluding it. I also use, sometimes, like, I think it's helpful to, like, with Inside Out, the characters from the movie Inside Out and Inside Out 2. I find that's also like helpful with explaining anger and like kind of distilling like those different emotions and different parts of ourselves, like things that make us angry versus things that build up and then we show anger. And so, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like if we allow it in everything else in the room, why not allow anger? Anger is definitely allowed in Riley's head in that movie. And so why not allow anger in the therapy room? I think it's different for maybe home experiences, like a home and how we communicate anger at home. But at least if we start having conversations about it with our kiddos instead of right away, like, punishing them, kind of makes me think about rupture and repair. And so, of course, like, at anger at home, like, we're going to maybe have to do a timeout, but then we should have to do some kind of time in so we can slow down and understand what happened. Because if we're not having these conversations, a lot is being missed. And then we get messages of like, my anger is not allowed to be expressed, or my sadness isn't allowed to be expressed, or my shame, my loneliness, all of those things. And so when we
which makes us more frustrated, and then we're more likely to get more angry.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I interrupted you there, Stephanie. I feel very inspired. I feel like you're making a good case for us to be curious and to try this out. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Let's give this a try. Let's explore and try to understand what anger is, where it's coming from, how it's functioning, how a kiddo feels about it. Find a way to talk about it, to name it, to explore it together. And I think you've given us some very practical ways of using toys or ourselves or little analogies, right? And even the movie Inside Out to be able to do that together. So thank you for inspiring us and for making a good case about this very important emotion.
No problem. I'm so happy to talk about it. And if we need a part two to go deeper, I'm here.
Love it. We'd love to have you back, friend. We'd love that.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories, and we'll wrap up. One of my favorite stories about anger is with my kiddo. So he's about 6 and a half now. And when he was around 4, I was realizing he was probably having more of the meltdown type of experiences, and he would run away and he would get really small in a ball, typically like in a corner or like between two pieces of furniture. And I was like, I need to make an impact here. Like, I need to address. And so when he wasn't angry, when we weren't having that moment, it was a nice moment between us. I just told him, do you know that it's okay to be angry at mom? Do you know it's okay to feel angry at me? That when you feel angry at me, you can just turn to me and I hope you'd feel safe enough to say, I'm angry at you because of such and such. Mm-hmm. And that it's totally okay, one, to feel angry and two, to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And our relationship transformed after that.
Mm.
And I had told him, as a kid, I was told it was okay to feel angry. And then when I did express that, bad things happened.
Mm.
So I got a super mixed message and I told him, and I said, that's not going to happen to you. I'm going to tell you that it's okay to feel angry on the inside. It's okay to tell me, and bad things won't happen after that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like super transformative.
Love it.
Like giving permission, inviting it in, like you said.
Yeah.
Because he was expressing it, but I had never told him it's okay to feel that way and it's okay to feel that way towards me or about me. And so I just gave him like super permission for it. It was wild.
Wow. That's really something, Rhonda. You made the anger relational and understandable and permissible. Mm-hmm. That's really something. I've never thought about doing that. Mm-hmm. Good point.
Such a beautiful point. And that's exactly like the conversations of like being able to have them at home, right? It's okay. Even if it's not even the whole, like you in general as like the parent, it's also like the situation. Like when you said, no, I couldn't handle it anymore. Like, what do you mean you told me no? And then when we get, it's also like that conversation we were having earlier about like, it's okay to be able to tell our kiddos what we've learned and processed as parents. And after we've learned and processed it, we can inform them of like that lineage of like that generational knowledge that we have gained from ourselves and then pass that wisdom on. Like, this is like where the change happens.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we welcome it, the less explosive it might even look like.
That's totally true. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot less explosive. Now he can come to me and he'll say things like, you assumed I wanted cereal for breakfast. You just gave me cereal for breakfast. You assumed I wanted that. You didn't ask me what I wanted for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the past, those types of explicit conversations, like I would just hand him the cereal and there would be some kind of an interruption.
Yeah.
Now he'll say, oh, so you just assumed that I wanted that. You didn't ask me. It's totally transforming. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Thanks for talking about this important topic. If other emotions are allowed and permissible to be in the room or in a relationship or in a family, then why not anger? And the more that we invite the anger, we might actually see it reduce and see communication about anger and being able to communicate anger and express it maybe verbally or in other ways that are more appropriate is actually more likely to happen the more we invite it.
Yeah, the more we invite in it and also softening it. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks, Stephanie. Enjoy your work.
Thanks.
Okay.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.